Maria Desmondi is a powerhouse. She is just such a lovely, easy to get along with woman who I am happy to call one of my virtual friends. Maria and I met a few years ago, both as authors. We were connected together by someone else you'll learn in our podcast. And I actually had a coaching call with Maria asking her about publishing my book, possibly being published under her new publishing license, which did not end up happening because I'm not the right fit for her kinds of books. And as everything has been unplaying in the last couple of months with the global pandemic and everyone being safe at home, I really wanted to deep dive into what Maria has been doing, because specifically, she started Sunnyside Up Homeschool, which was an impromptu homeschool that she started on her Instagram channel for children that ended up just mushrooming and growing. And she was consistent all the way through the school year, both with her own kids and all of the children that were following her online, going through her unique children's books all about empathy and compassion and all of those great quality characteristics that we want kids to have. I would see on her Instagram, I would see all the fun crafts she was doing with everyone. And I was like, this is going to stop eventually. But oh no, once Maria decides she's going to do something, she's super, super consistent. And she kept up with homeschooling other people's children for free through the end of the spring school year. So I wanted for you to follow Maria, because if you have young school age kids, you're going to love her books. You're going to love her. And if she does anything wacky and crazy like this in the fall, I definitely want you guys to know about it, because she's just such a quality person to be following and would be a great resource for your kids if they are going to be safe at home this year during the school year. So listen in to my conversation with my friend, Maria Desmondi. Maria, welcome to the Organized 365 podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I am so excited to have you on the podcast. I think we met like maybe 4 years ago. It's been a while.
It's been a while. It was Natalie. Natalie introduced us.
Yes, because I was self-publishing my books on Amazon at the time. I can't remember how many of your books that you had. You had formed Cardinal Rule Press, but I think you were just starting to take on other authors into your publishing space, which we'll talk about later. But I actually hired you as a coach. Like, I had a coaching session with you about how to publish my book and just in general, how to go about publishing. So I would love to just start with your story, and then we're going to get into some other conversations based on just like having known each other over the last 4 years. But I just wanted to start with Maria. How did you get into publishing to begin with? How did you start writing stories? Because I know a lot of the Organized 365 audience have on their list to write a story, and specifically a children's story, and you are a children's author. I know that's totally different than the kind of publishing I do.
Yes, yes. So here's the deal. I was a teacher, and I was, you know, living and breathing in the space of children day in and day out. And I started to notice, this was back in 2006, I started to notice that the 6 and 7 year olds I was working with, they were worried about things that a 6 and 7 year old should not be worried about. They should be thinking about, am I going to go on the monkey bars or am I going to play Foursquare with my friends? Mm-hmm. But they were worrying about, you know, how, what kind of clothes they were wearing and if kids were going to like them, if they ate their traditional, I had a lot of Indian students, you know, I've got this food, I don't want to eat it. People say it's different. And so I thought, gosh, I need a book that I can read to them that reminds them they can just have the courage to be themselves. So I looked and looked, and again, I don't think I was looking on Amazon in 2006, and I couldn't find a book that had real kids. I found a lot of books with teddy bears and dinosaurs talking about self-esteem. So I'm a problem solver, and I decided to write the book, Spaghetti in a Hot Dog Bun, and I self-published it with, back at the time, it was called a vanity press. So basically, I went through a publisher, but it was a paid project. The book was selling, and it was selling a lot, which was awesome. And I resigned from teaching and decided to just keep on writing and building that part of my company.
Oh, wow. So, okay. So you resigned from teaching after writing your first book. How many books do you have now?
10.
Okay. 10 books. So the first one is Spaghetti in a Hot Dog Bun. Now I bought, I think I have 7 or 8 of them. Let's see.
One is I
have 7.
One is an ebook in the, for the publishing industry. And then I have a parenting book that just came out during COVID as well.
Okay. So I have 7 of the 10. And I read Spaghetti in a Hot Dog Bun last night. So I read all of your books. And that's the thing. If you're going to interview a children's author, it's much easier to get through all of their books in like an hour than it is if you're going to do a different book. But I read Spaghetti in a Hot Dog Bun about just having like eating different foods. And like, you know, it is hard to be a kid. Like, it's really hard to be a kid. And you think people are thinking things about you that they're actually not thinking about you. And as a preschool teacher, early childhood educator, yes, we use books to facilitate conversations and for people to see each other in those books. So I want to talk about your business first. I want to talk about how do you go from one book, quit teaching, and now you're going to be a publisher, which you publish through a Vanity Press. So I published my first two books through Amazon. That's another way you can do it, through CreateSpace. The Mindset of Organization and How ADHD Affects Home Organization are printed on demand. So they'll never run out at Amazon because they're all printed at Amazon and you can get Kindle, Audible, or printed copies. So you made your first book. And then when I met you, which was again, I think like 4 or 5 years ago, when did you start to like make your own publishing company? What does that even mean to have your own publishing company?
Yeah, well, along the line, I was working with a distributor in Michigan, and I was getting that mom intuition kind of feeling like something's off. And I had a meeting with the owner of the company, and you know, he basically told me he was really tired and he didn't want to do the work anymore. And I was like, this is a red flag. So I found a new distributor. And when I signed with the new distributor, they said, so who's on your team? And I said, well, you're looking at her. And they could not even believe that I was doing this business by myself with the amount of sales that I was bringing in. And so that was another red flag, like, well, maybe I shouldn't be doing this on my own. Maybe I should have someone on my team. And so I started building my team. And then somewhere along the line, Lisa, I just wanted the limelight to be taken off of me. And I said, I'd done a ton of coaching and consulting. I said, I want to be able to help other people get their message into the world. And I don't want to do it in a Vanity Press kind of way. I want to do it in like the traditional way. So I started Cardinal Rule Press 5 years ago. And we're small but mighty. We take on only 2 titles a year. At some point, maybe we'll increase that. But again, through all of this, I was building my team. I was trying to handle scaling. And I just really took my time with marketing those 2 books that came out every year. So it's been 5 years and we take on 2 published authors a year.
So you have your own 10 books. So you have about 10 books that you've also published of other authors then?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'd say that same with Organize 365. You know, I want to help women get their home organized, but I realize you need in-home professional organizers. So we have the certification program, and in the certification program that's, you know, about 3 years old, we have some professional organizers in there that are really creating their own unique niches. And we're starting to highlight those instead of Organize 365 too. So I think it's fun when you like deep dive into what you are good at and you start to get some traction, you then have a little bit of bandwidth where you can add 1 or 2 people here or there and kind of all work together towards that same mission, vision, and value. So I love that.
Well, and you said it with mission, vision, and value. And that's, I started the company very strategic with, this is what our mission is. These are the values that the company is going to uphold. And I've been challenged many times throughout the process as to, you know, why aren't you publishing books with talking animals? And I say, we're just realistic fiction only because I really am dedicated for children to be able to look at our titles and see themselves within the pages.
Yeah, I love that. We're going to get into that a little deeper in the second part of this interview, but still sticking on your business. When I talked to you 4 or 5 years ago, I know Natalie and I connected us because we both were publishing, but really it was the way that you were doing your speaking tours. And I have this perpetual thing. I want to do this book tour, which is definitely not happening this fall, an in-person book tour. But you, even 5 years ago, were doing very little in-person. You had kind of created your own kind of touring schedule, delivery. I would love to hear more about how do you visit kids in school even before the pandemic, and then how did that have you perfectly positioned with the pandemic?
Yeah, and again, it goes back to values. So I have 3 children of my own, and my first child was born right after the first book came out. And I just really wanted to make sure that I was keeping a healthy balance, and I was really doing what was important to me. So I would always say, yes, thank you so much for asking me to speak at this conference in New York, but I don't travel right now for work. And so because I don't like to say no, I started virtual tours. So I would say no, but yes, like I can't physically be there, but I can virtually be there. So I started off on Skype, and then it moved over to Zoom, and doing virtual in-school visits across around the world. I've done Brazil and, you know, South America several times, and over in Europe. So just having a clear vision as to what I value as a mom and working from home mom. And then in the last couple of years, I've done some more travel for speaking, select, you know, something that is worth my time and worth my while. But I've always kept the virtual updated. And the thing about the virtual visits is I make it super interactive. So it really does feel like I'm at the school. And I think that's the biggest amount of feedback that I've gotten, that they feel like I'm in the room.
Yeah. Can you, like, if it's not divulging too much of like your secret sauce, because I know a lot of people are trying to figure out how to pivot virtually. You already were doing it. What are some of the things, how does it feel like if you've got a whole bunch of 5-year-olds in the room, like how do you even get their attention? How do you make it not just feel like they're watching a TV screen? Like, what do you do?
Yeah, well, one thing is I recommend, I actually require that the teachers are in the room. So you can't just drop the kids off to the gym and then walk away. The teachers have to be there for classroom management, because I can't be there. If I'm in a school visit and I'm in the room and there's a child that's, you know, misbehaving, I'll walk by and maybe just, you know, give them a little smile or make eye contact so they know that I'm watching and I'm listening. And it's harder with Zoom. But I build in something called brain breaks, and I'm happy to share the secret sauce, because I think any speaker with young children needs to know developmentally, kids cannot sit for 45 minutes and watch the screen without, now they all want to go to chat and they just want to type buttons and, you know, emojis. And so you got to turn off the chat and you got to set down those, lay down those ground rules when you first get on the call. This is a visit. These are the expectations. So I lay down the ground rules. I have brain breaks about every 8 to 12 minutes. So in a 30-minute program, which is my most common, we'll do a couple brain breaks. And that means I get the kids standing up. I get them crossing the midline of their body. We do follow the leader. I might put music on and we'll just do like some wild and crazy fun dancing. And then I get them settled down again. So it gives them a chance to move their mind and their body.
Yeah, amazing, amazing. And so you and I, we've built our businesses virtually from home. Like, we're working from home moms. We always have been. What I love about the global pandemic is, if you hear when I unmute myself and talk, you could probably hear the buzzsaw in the background because we're getting a new deck. Like, it used to be we would pretend that everything we're doing was perfect, and now all of you are working at home and you realize it's not as easy as we made it look. So now I'm like, fine, we're having a deck built in the back. I want to keep recording podcasts. So that has been helpful. But as we realize that we can work from home, it doesn't have to be perfect. We could still get our message out there. I also think it's important that, you know, I've grown Organized 365 from home, and I charge retail pricing for my services and for my products. And you too charge speaker rates for being a speaker. It's not like because it's virtual, it's $10. Like, they're still getting a published author that was a teacher that could do the classroom management. Is there anything you'd like to say to people who are like, oh, how do I work from home now, that may be having those kinds of thoughts? I know you're pretty open about how you've grown your business.
Yeah, well, you know, you have to value your work. And when I do a program, there's a lot of design that I put into it. You know, if the school wants a program on empathy, I can put a program together on empathy for them. So it's very tailored to the needs of the school. And I value my time. You know, when my kids were a little bit younger, I would have to get a childcare to be able to do these visits. But, you know, then they went to school and it was a little bit easier. So I think that it's a little less as far as my fee goes, because I'm not traveling, I'm not driving, I'm not carrying all my equipment to a school. But I do value my work, and it is still a paid visit. And I do want to kind of circle back. The last part of the secret sauce that I didn't get to tell you was the question and answer period. I actually have kids physically get out of their seats and they come up to the camera. They introduce themselves to me. They tell me their name. We use eye contact. And that's a big component to it too.
Yeah, anything you want to pop back in and tell me as you're thinking about it. I'm sure people are like, oh, could you interview Maria every week? Yeah, I know. She's lovely, isn't she? She's amazing. So I love that you're a published author. I know there's some people in our audience that are interested in that part. But as I said in the introduction, I really wanted to have this conversation with you because I follow you on Instagram and I didn't watch every story you were doing. But I noticed that when the pandemic happened, I launched something called Lisa School, and I did it for like 10 days. And then I was off to doing, you know, helping the women at home get themselves organized as I usually am. And I kept seeing you going and going, like you were doing something during the pandemic for those kids. And I want to hear, how did that come about? And when you realized it wasn't going to be 2 weeks, it was going to be like 3 months. How did you keep the momentum going? I think they even got certificates at the end, I saw. Like,
yes!
Just tell us, what did you do? See, I'm watching, Maria. I didn't watch every story, but I did see some of the stuff coming through.
Well, and I'm getting choked up over here because, okay, so this is what happened. We get word, it's my book came out, Sunnyside Upbringing Parenting book came out March 1st. And I think it was March 13th, we got word that schools were starting to close. And it was a Thursday night and we got notice that my children's school was probably going to be closed for 2 or 3 weeks. And I thought, oh my goodness, my book tour is coming to a halt. My biggest speaking month, I have like 6 weeks a year that is a large percentage of my income. It was all coming to a halt. And I was like, what are these parents going to do with their kids home nonstop for 3 weeks? And I thought, gosh, I could teach these kids. I'll use my books and I'll teach these kids. I'm gonna call it Sunnyside Homeschool. So I created a landing page that night and I started sharing it Friday morning. I had 8,000 views within 48 hours. I had over 2,000 families sign up to go to this free school. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 30 minutes, a different character trait each time. Interactive book reading. We did a demonstration. We would do a brain break. So it was really interactive. And that first call, my brave pants on, I had like 700 kids logged on. And I could not turn chat off. And I had this little boy, Wyatt. Wyatt talking about potty talk. And I was like, oh my gosh. So it wasn't perfect, Lisa. It was not perfect. But then I learned after the first call what to do with that many kids logging on. And again, I taught them about Zoom and what's proper behavior, what's not. We went for 40 lessons. 40 lessons that I developed, designed. It was not easy. It was a lot of work for me to pull together the resources. I mean, I always did a demonstration that was physical. So I had to I was doing, you know, volcanoes from the home and having to pull together supplies. But my favorite part, there's two things that were just fantastic. So many, now the numbers dropped off. I think I had, by the end, I always had around 200, 300 kids logged on. So the numbers definitely dropped off, but my three children sat there the entire time in every lesson, and they learned so much. That opportunity wasn't just good for all these families, but it was good for my own kids. We talked about things like anxiety and worry and things that kids were experiencing during this time. And for me, I was experiencing a ton of anxiety, but the busyness that it brought me to design and develop all these lessons, it literally helped me get through. And last but not least, I had so many emails of parents thanking me for this opportunity that I gave their families. And it was completely free. And I did that because we were all in such a hard place. And I know now I have over 2,000 people on my email list who I've definitely warmed that community. And now they're with me. They're a client of mine. They're a customer, a future customer of mine.
Yeah. And as so most of my audience probably has never met you before. And now they definitely want to follow you in case you do something crazy like this again, or whatever you're going to do. Because how old are your children, Maria? Tell us how old your children are.
6, 8, and 11.
Yeah. So, I mean, like you're in the thick of it. Your kids are also home with you. So like you need to work and entertain them. So how can people connect? What are all the ways that they can follow you, join you, get on your email list?
Yeah, I think probably Instagram's the best place because I've really pared things down as I've gotten a little bit older. So Instagram would be my number one social media. And then, you know, if you go to mariadesmondi.com, you're welcome to email me. You can find the newsletter, sign up there. And we're just, my team and I, we're all about, and it's very similar to what you're doing. We're just here to help. We're here to give you resources mm-hmm. to make your parenting journey so much better.
And that's Dismondy, Dismondy. And you can Correct. Find that in the show notes. If you're listening to this in your podcast app, just click on the artwork and you'll be able to see that as well. So I knew all that about you already. So I just wanted to tell our audience just about that. But that's not even why we did this podcast. Maria is so shy. She's like, oh, don't say how great I am. She's amazingly awesome, you guys. She's just so cool. So the reason I reached out to you, well, also, I reached out to you like in January, February time because I asked you to be a reviewer of The Paper Solution. So I sent you a pre-release copy and you were so generous to read the book and give us a review of the book. And as a well-published author, that just meant so much to me. So we've been in communication throughout the years, but specifically, I've been thinking a lot over the last couple months about this issue of racism and what I didn't know to be true about the American history that I've lived through. And how do we really have this conversation about racism, and how do we really change our behavior and our beliefs over time? And as I've been thinking about this over the last couple of months, I come back to what is my role as the CEO and founder of Organize 365. Like, I can go out and I could become a political activist. There are all kinds of things I could do, but my company is a bunch of loving, caring, grace-filled, mostly women. How do we, what is it that we could do, or what is the next logical step beyond just having conversations, which I've had so many conversations? How do we start to change the conversation with inside of homes? Because that's what I focus on, organizing homes. And I was talking to someone and she said that she babysat for a family. And when she was babysitting for the family, the child was maybe 6 years old. And she went into her bedroom and she had all these baby dolls. And she had Asian baby dolls and black baby dolls and white baby dolls. And right now her favorite was a black baby doll. And this was a white little girl. And the babysitter was so taken aback by that, that they talked to the mom after and they said, you know, I noticed in your daughter's bedroom that she has many different race baby dolls. And the mom, who was white, said, well, of course, because she's going to have many different race friends as she grows up. And so she needs to see them in her baby dolls. And I was like, mind blown. Like, it's just so simple, but my mind was blown. And I remember being a, you know, babysitting people in the 80s. And that was when the baby dolls really started to be black and white and Asian. And then we had Cabbage Patch dolls that would look like you. And it was the first time we really went from just white or porcelain baby dolls to baby dolls that more represented the children who were playing with the baby dolls. And at that time, the way they were marketed and the way I thought about them was, you get a baby doll that matches you. Like, you can have a doll that looks like you, and you could even have custom dolls done in the 80s that looked exactly like you, and you could get matching outfits so you matched your doll. But when she told me that story, I was like, duh. Like, of course. It's not about having a baby doll that looks like you. It's about having a baby doll that looks like the world. Like, your baby dolls, your Barbie. If you have one Barbie doll, you have 80 Barbie dolls. Like, nobody has one Barbie doll. I only had two Barbie dolls growing up, but all of my friends had like 80 Barbie dolls. And so you have all the Barbie dolls. I had birthday Barbie, so she had a rainbow dress and one other Barbie. Those were the Barbies that I had.
I love it.
But Barbie, you know, like, you have all the Barbies, like all the people in the world. And I was like, yes, that is a message that Organize 365 can get behind. Our baby dolls should look like the world. And then I thought, books. And I was like, Maria, I know Maria's books look like the world. And I went online. I was like, I knew I was right. And this is a thing. I was talking to my team about this in May. In May, we were having a lot of opportunities come our way. And I said to our team, I said, you know what? All of the opportunities that are coming our way in May are from relationships and work that we did from February 2020 earlier. Like, it wasn't like in May of 2020 that you could cold call someone and make a relationship and have something happen. Getting through the coronavirus shutdown pandemic was all about the investments in people, in systems, in yourself that you had done prior to the pandemic and the global shutdown. And then you pulled on all of that you had invested in yourself and your team and your family. And so when you look at Maria's books, and I'm reading all of her books, there's no way that she could have changed all 10 of those books in the last 4 months, especially since she was homeschooling, you know, 2,000 of your kids, and changed the children that are represented in those books. And the children that are represented in those books are all colors, all shapes, all sizes, all abilities. And that's why I was like, Maria, please, please, please come on the podcast so we could talk about your amazing books that represent all of the children and how we can have some of these conversations, open up some of these conversations. Now, I've read your books, and I could be wrong. None of these are specifically about the issue of racism. But I want to start with, there are two books that I wanted you to dive in and share. One, which I think is my favorite, and it might have been one of your earlier books, is called The Potato Chip Champ.
It's my favorite, too.
Oh, and as I looked at all of them, I was like, this is my favorite of all of them. Now,
wait,
this one...
So this one deals with socioeconomic differences.
Yes, yes. Yes, and the children in here, there are no Black children in this book, like as you're flipping through, but I think it is more...
the main characters. There are some friends. There
yes,
are some friends,
yes. It is characters. Not the... but I think that this is somewhat of the main issue of the racism conversation, not necessarily having Black and white people together, but the impact that racism has had on the socioeconomics of the different genders and how that is still playing out today. So could you share what The Potato Chip Champ is about?
Yes, The Potato Chip Champ is about two little boys who are on the same softball team, and they're complete opposites. So Champ is a nickname for the boy who has everything and who does everything really well. He has the latest and greatest scooters and rollerblades, etc. Then there's a little boy named Walter who has these big glasses and he has a dented and rusty bike. His clothes are torn and tattered, but he has so many friends. So the whole book is about Champ, who keeps saying, why does everyone like Walter? Walter doesn't have a lot of stuff. Like, why does everybody want to be Walter's friend? Mm-hmm. And so the realization for Champ, the boy who has it all, is that, gosh, the reason they want to be Walter's friend isn't because of what he has. It's because of who he is. He's a kind and generous individual. And this was a book that was inspired by my own growing up. I was always looking at neighbors on the street saying, why do they have all that? Why do they have this? And just that sense of contentment and being okay and knowing that it's not about the stuff. It's truly mm-hmm. about who do you want to be? Like when you die, people go to your funeral, what are they saying about you? Are they saying that you have the coolest rollerblades? Or are they saying, wow, she lived her life to spread kindness in the world and she made an impact on the world. So I felt like that was a lesson that was tough for me to learn as a child. And there mm-hmm. is not a book out there like that. Well, now there is. There are other ones out there now, but there wasn't at the time.
Yeah. And I just, so many things in here, like Champ gets hurt. And so he can't even play in the final game and he has to have crutches and things like that. And what I love about Walter is just his positivity. He's just always happy and positive. And
he shows up for someone who
always sharing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's just I really, really loved this story. And I think, as I'm delving into more research on the whole issue of racism, there is this huge disparity between wealth in the different races, and that has been, it's not necessarily a try harder issue. It's a systemic issue. The other one I wanted you to share is called Pink Tiara Cookies for Three. Mm-hmm. I mean, the cover of this is just so awesome. We have three different girls here on the cover. And do you want to share about that one?
Yeah, so this book is more about inclusion. It's about three little girls, two of which are neighbors and best friends, and a new girl, Jasmine, moves into town. And, you know, the little girl, Stella, says, well, we're going to include Jasmine because she's new, and the more the merrier. And this little girl, Sammy, says, well, no, you're my best friend. I don't want to play with anyone but you. And so it's really looking at the fact that we should always teach our children to include others. Because only good things can come from inclusion versus excluding others and saying, no, you cannot play. And, you know, I love the story because the mom says, oh, it's the friendship triangle. When three friends come around, there's usually like a little bit of who's being yep. left out. And so there's a scene where the girls go to swing on the swing set. And they run over, and one of the little girls whispers and says, "Oh no, there's only one swing. We can't all go on the swing." And the other little girl goes, "No, I've got this." And they go to the tire swing where three people can fit. And so it's just all about being problem solvers and figuring out ways to include others so that everyone is part of the fun and you're not leaving anyone out.
Yeah, I just love it. And then so the three girls are all different ethnicities on the cover. So it's three different ethnic races, and that is never mentioned in the book. But like you said, in your books, I mean, I could just keep, this is not a video podcast, but I'm holding them all up, and they're not all little white kids. Like they're
Lisa, I've known the research for, gosh, 2015 is really when there was a movement called We Need Diverse Books. Mm. And that's when my book, Chocolate Milk, Por Favor, came out, which has been doing really well during this movement because it is about celebrating our differences. Mm-hmm. And I actually pulled up some research before our interview, and it's from the University of Wisconsin in 2019. And the representation in our children's books, it's 50% white, 27% animals, 10% black, 7% Asian, 5% Latinx, and 1% Native American. And that is not the representation of what our world looks like.
Right.
And so I, as a business owner, see that, and I've known that for about 5 years now, and I'm trying to make a difference in my small company because I want any kid to open up a book and be able to see themselves within the pages.
Yeah, and when you look at your library, I mean, I think that's one of the things that's going around, that as we have all these Zooms, we have all these big CEOs and they've got their libraries behind them and people are trying to zoom in and see what is on their bookshelves and the books that they're reading. Like, you know, I can't remember who said it, but the only difference between who you are today and who you are tomorrow are the people you meet and the books that you read. And those are the things that change you, are the conversations you have with real people and the things that you read inside of books. And this is a very easy way for us to start finding both authors that are of different race than us, but also, especially with children, picture books and stories of more diverse characters in them, because you know you get lost in a book. I mean, I have not read the Harry Potter series. I have to be the only person on the planet who has not. But those of you who have, like, you are just transported to that land in your head as soon as I said that. And that's what a book does. Like, it really creates a vision for you of the world that you live in and also these alternative worlds that your head kind of plays in.
And it's an indirect way of teaching. So for you to sit mm-hmm. there and say to your children, you need to include others. You should always make room for everyone. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit harder for a kid to understand that. But if you put it into the context of a story and a character who experienced it, they can look back and say, oh, I remember how Sammy did this. She found a tire swing mm-hmm. or she found an activity where everyone could be involved. And so they can make those connections to the stories and they hold on to them longer than what the parents say usually goes in one ear and out the other.
Yeah, and you're so right. Almost all of the books that I love to teach diversity and inclusion and to talk about emotions with my preschool and kindergarten classroom, they were all animals. It's like Elmer, the patchwork elephant, and the yeah. ladybug. Like, I could think of, they're almost all animals. I would say
talking animals.
Yeah, talking animals. Like, let's not have our kids up talking animals.
And so I just wanted to go back. You yeah. talked about your business, and throughout all of this, you're saying, well, what can my business do? And I've had a lot of different companies reach out to me, like, what is Cardinal Rule Press doing? What can you do here? What can you do there? And I just go back to books. And so I've been partnering with many organizations on donating some of our books to different organizations who can get them in the right hands to spread these important messages. So again, I'm focused on educating children. You're focused on getting into those homes and getting those messages into the homes. And so I think if we can all put forth some effort to do something, do better, to educate ourselves.
Yeah, and we will be, so I have bought all of these books, and this will be part of launch day for us. We will be raffling off all of these books and mailing them out to some winner on the Paper Solution launch day. I'm super excited about that.
Oh, fun.
Another thing that I did with Abby, some of the we did videos and we did books that I really enjoyed doing were American Girl. Like, I love the American Girl stories.
Yes.
And I love those videos. I mean, I think we watched the McKenna story a million times. And there's a lot of diversity in there, both of generations and history. And so I've really enjoyed those as well. And I love how the American Girl dolls will take a time period and a doll and then just really play out what that might have looked like for that child.
Yeah, and you see, like, even a big company like American Girl, when my son wanted a doll, they had one boy to choose from. This was 5 years ago. And so since then, they've grown. They have different boys now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, even these smaller or these bigger companies, they have room to grow. Look at Band-Aid. Band-Aid got it together. Barbie, Mattel. Mattel is, their Barbies in the last couple of years, different shapes and sizes, which I think is wonderful.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure you can attest to this as your company is growing, as my company is growing, like it is, we're moving as fast as we can. Like, my big thing about diversity is I wanted to make sure that when we started Organize 365, we had diversity of generations, that I wasn't just speaking to Gen X, that we also had millennial and Gen Z and baby boomer and silent generations. And we do that. And then second, we were really diving into making sure we had neurodiversity. So ADHD, learning disabilities, physical disabilities, like how do we support all of those things in the family? And now we have our first man on the team. And, you know, there's always more diversity that you can have. There's always more that you can continue to grow. You start somewhere and you always start with you, whoever you are. Yes. Your company's going to look like you. And then you grow from there. But it's just the awareness that there needs to be more diversity.
It's
I love
the awareness. And I actually have a team member right now looking at our numbers, because we had last year we had over 600 people submit manuscripts to our company, and we have not had one male author yet. But the percentage, and I don't know the numbers yet, but I know it's really low. We don't have a lot of men who are actually submitting books to us. So what can we do differently to get more visibility in the marketplace to have both female and men who are, and male who are submitting manuscripts to us? So it's just, it's everything. It's always something to think about.
Right. And so you have 600 manuscripts that have been submitted to you. You pick two per year. That's low odds. But there are some people in the audience are going, how would I even submit? And what are you even looking to partner with in publishing?
Yeah, well, I will tell you, it's being authentic and being thorough. So if you are looking to publish, you are going to want to look at the publishing company. And it's as simple as reading their submission guidelines and following the rules. And I know that sounds really simple, but some people don't do that. So they'll just create one cover letter and they'll blast it out to, you know, 100 different publishers. Well, immediately my team and I, my acquisitions editor, if you don't follow the rules, you go to a slush pile. So following the rules means we only take realistic fiction, like we were talking about. We don't take any talking animals. And so we will get sci-fi. We will get different types of manuscripts. So it's like, if you just took a hot second to read the submission guidelines, you wouldn't have to send us the email and now go to the slush pile. So I think doing a little bit of homework and being authentic as well, being yourself and, you know, making that connection. If you were to pitch a news story, or you were to pitch a podcast, I hope that you would do a little bit of homework first to know a little bit about the podcast to see if you're a good fit. So that to me is authenticity. Are you really an authentic choice? Are you a good fit for each other? If not, then don't waste your time. Go to another one, find another one.
Yeah, and I'm not a good fit for Maria. I asked. She was like, no, thank you. So, I mean, of 600, she's going to take two. So don't be offended. And if you're going to publish with a traditional publisher, you need to not be offended, because they say no to almost everything.
And those numbers are right not, one. Those ratios are very common in the industry. Yep. And you should not lose hope, because there's so many publishers. If you can just do the research and find the one that's going to be a good fit for you, then they're going to pick up that manuscript and say, let's go for it.
Yeah. And if you are looking to publish, I think we can talk to this also, Maria. A lot of people think if you write a really good story, a publisher could sell that story for you. A publisher publishes. A publisher doesn't sell. You sell. So you have to have built an audience and, you know, a following and people who are ready to buy this book. I mean, Putnam is going to do a great job at supporting the paper solution being launched with a lot of efforts that they're doing. But any media that I get, that media is not looking at Putnam. They're going to my website. They're going to my video footage. They're going to my audience are going, okay, well, if she has almost 8 million downloads on her podcast, apparently some people are listening. I'm looking at her followers on social media. I'm looking at her past sales of the books that she sold herself. And then they're saying, okay, maybe we will put her on our TV show, or we'll review her in our magazine, or we'll have her on our radio show. A publisher can't do that for you. You have to start to have built that business for yourself.
Yes, building that platform and the author brand. Can we just go back? Is that a true number? 8 million downloads?
That is, at the time of this recording, that for sure will be the true number.
Wow, congrats. That is,
oh, thank you.
In the headspace of a lot of homes. Wow.
Well, that's the number of total podcast episode downloads. It's not 8 million people.
Still.
But yes, yes. It still, is in the top 5% of all podcasts around the world. Yeah, it is. Yay. It's fun.
Amazing.
Thank you, Maria. That's so sweet of you. So what's next for you? Because you're always doing something.
What is next for me? That is a great question. Well, so we talked about pivoting, and because going back in the fall may or may not look the same, I have been really putting a lot of time and effort into the publishing side of the business, not so much my speaking side. So I have been attending a lot of roundtable discussions and attending webinars and trying to really grow myself, develop myself as the publisher, and just doing a lot more with that side of the business. And I love, love, love this part of the company where I get to educate our authors. So I've been hosting masterclasses, hiring speakers to come into our company and do some virtual teaching to our authors. So helping to educate them so that they can build that brand. So for me, it's really just kind of pivoting and shifting from, okay, I have written all these books and I am an author, but I'm going to shift and really put my time and energy on the publishing side, because I just don't know what the speaking side is going to look like in the fall.
Yeah, we're recording this the last day in June. This will probably be coming out at the end of July or the beginning of August. This podcast will come out. We're just now starting to hear hints of what schools are going to do. It looks like pretty much what I'm able to surmise is if you want to keep your kids home, you're going to be allowed to do that. That's not going to be a problem at all. I don't see very many schools where there's a completely 100% in-school option. There are going to be a lot of hybrid models is what I'm seeing. And so even before that came out, our team was like, how do we, just like you did, Sunnyside, was it Sunnyside Up or Sunnyside Homeschooling?
Sunnyside Upbringing.
Sunnyside yeah. Up Homeschooling in the spring. I totally abandoned Lisa's school pretty quickly and just was like, okay, we need to save Organize 365. I'll worry about this later. But I watched the chaos that was happening for my friends on Facebook in general, as it went from, this is going to be an extended spring break, to, oh my gosh, this is an ending. And it was hard for parents. It was hard for teachers. It was hard for students. I don't think it was easy for anyone. And I was like, again, when I look at all of this, what's the one thing that I could do that would be helpful? I'm not going to homeschool all of these kids, although I would love to. And it was, how did they organize it? Like the communication. Teachers were trying to get information to students who were trying to ask their parents, and parents were emailing teachers. And it was just like 12-hour days for teachers of just replying to emails and trying to figure out links and Zooms and all of the stuff. And I thought, you know, students need to be empowered to organize their own assignments in a planner. So we've come out with a planner, a student planner for grade school, middle school, a different one for high school and college. Wow. How do you track long-term assignments? How do you track daily assignments on paper in a notebook the same way so that your parents could come and look at it and go, yep, you wrote them all down. You put fishies through all of them. You must be done. And just have that where if students are in a Zoom, they write it down on paper in front of them. Because when you're in the classroom, you can look up on the board, or maybe there's some kind of electronic resource, and there's true electronic fatigue.
Like, yeah, I love this, Lisa. And honestly, I get sent a lot of like paper products to test different, you know, from different printers. I got a beautiful calendar that had artwork on it. And I used that calendar, had a lot of note pages, and every day my kids, my fifth grader and my second grader, they had to listen to their teacher's Zoom and they had to write down what their assignments yes. were. And I did the same thing. I was like, this is your responsibility. Yes. I will check that you crossed it off and you checked it off, but I'm trying to teach them that. So I will be curious to see this planner.
Yes. And this planner is going to match the Lisa binder, which is just a white binder that has 5 slash pockets in it, but the colors of the slash pockets match the planner. So if you need a page, it's going to be a, because organization in school is imposed on students by teachers, and the organization of the teacher for that year is how you get that classroom. And as you move out of single teacher classrooms, like in third grade, now the student has to organize their work based on the teacher. So yes, if you have four correct. Different teachers, there's four different ways of turning it in, four different ways of recording it. And this one wants a notebook, and that one wants a folder, and this one wants loose leaf, and that one wants scrap, and it's too much. It's too much. It's time for the students to have one binder and one planner, and then put the teacher's assignments in this one system that they can then use that system year after year after year. That's what I did with my kids, because they couldn't keep up with all the different organizational systems that the teachers had. And any teacher system will go into this one binder and one planner and one place to check that you can't lose it. So I thought, well, that's what Organize 365 can contribute. You don't know if your kids are going back to school, when they're going back to school, if they're going to end up at home, if you're going to homeschool, but no matter what you do, this planner will start to teach your student and give them the power to organize their own assignments and learn an organizational system that can go year after year after year after year.
I love that. And how, where will this be available?
This will be available on organize365.com.
Okay.
It's part of our kids program. So you have to already be a member of the kids program, because we also have the kids program in it, which is, well, my audience knows, but it's $99 if you're a 100-day member and $297 if you're not.
Okay.
But yeah, you are going to notice Maria started doing her lives and sharing her stories through the Sunnyside Up homeschooling. I am looking at, my children are not school age, but I know what school age children need, and my college kids will have this planner. Because in the college planner, it says in February, check your lease termination. Do you need to let them know 60 days in advance? Calculate it out. You know, like if you're at college and it is November, it says check and make sure you have winter clothing. Like in the planner, all these things that you as parents want to say to your kids, and they're like, stop nagging me. I will just tell them right in the planner.
That's so cool.
A high school and college one, they have a monthly budget. They have a weekly checklist. They have, you know, it reminds them what to do monthly. So it really is a step from mom giving you a to-do list to you becoming an independent person. And that can start as young as second grade. It really can.
And that's what our goal is as parents, is we want to raise humans who are kind and independent.
Independent. Yes, independent. So be looking for the companies that you follow to be making subtle changes in the policies that you see there. Oh my goodness. Can we talk about more controversial things in 2020? It's not a challenge. Do not bring more on here. I'm like, well, it's really hard to even digest how fast, especially in a political election year, what is going on. Have conversations about everything that is going on. It's easier to talk to other people about what they're going to do with their kids going back to school than to just be trying to digest everything on social media by yourself in your home. Conversations usually make things better. Helps you process your own thoughts, get other opinions, and then look for little helps that can help you, because we're not going back to normal anytime soon. And when we do, it's not going to be February of 2020. It's going to be something different, but it can always be better. Like the good will come out, and you probably listening to this have some little idea and you're like, oh, nobody needs that idea. Well, if Maria hadn't started, you know, her Sunnyside Up homeschooling, then a lot of parents wouldn't have gotten a nice break, which they are very grateful to you, Maria. But a lot of kids would not have learned those lessons from a qualified teacher who goes out and speaks. If your kids get this planner and they learn how to plan this school year, and that's the only thing they learn this school year, it's a lifelong skill. They're mm-hmm. going to take with them for the rest of their lives. And we just cannot do as much today as we could 6 months ago. We've physically and mentally don't have the same capacity that we did adjusting to so much change. So the more, stop it, Hunter, the more that you can, good luck. If anybody knows that, train a dog. I know there is a way. The more that you can look at what is the life skill, what are the things that we could do today that will make our lives better 6 months from now, a year from now, 10 years from now, don't worry so much about getting an A+ on today. Worry about becoming the person you want to be in the future.
I love that. I don't know if there's a better way to end. That's a great There it is.
Maria, thank you so much for having this conversation with me. I love you so much. You guys go check up everything at mariadismondi.com. Go follow her on Instagram. Who knows what she might surprise us with, especially if you have school age kids. Just great books to buy for your own library, great books to give as a gift, and start more conversations. Maria, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Lisa.
Are you loving these new podcasts? Oh my gosh, I could talk to you guys forever, and I love talking to you actually in person. If you have a story and you would love to share it on the podcast, just go to organize365.com/Wednesday to apply. We are just weeks away from the launch of the paper solution into bookstores all over the world on August 4th. I am so excited. Now, we just had the virtual paper organizing retreat for people who pre-ordered 5 copies of the book, and that was so much fun. And you might think, oh, darn, I missed that pre-order, so I'll just wait until the book comes out. No, no, no. Please, please, please. Please still pre-order a copy of the book before August 4th. We are taking everyone that has pre-ordered the books since all the way back in January through book launch day. You'll have to have pre-ordered by August 3rd, and we're putting you in a gigantic raffle. And then on book launch day, I will be going live, and we'll be pulling out people's names who have pre-ordered the book to win different prizes that are being donated both by Organize 365 and other companies that I've done business with over the last 8 years. It is going to be a gigantic party. If you could be live on Facebook on August 4th, you can participate with us. But if you place your pre-order book and you get the Sunday Basket video where I show you what my Sunday Basket slash buckets are, your entry will also be entered into this raffle that we're doing on August 4th. So please, 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 if you're already considering buying the paper solution, could you place the order before book launch day so that we know that you will get your book on or the day after book launch and you'll be in the special raffle that we're doing. You can find out more information by going to organize365.com/thepapersolution.